Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Very pleased to be with you for this fun and informative show. You're going to love it. Later on in the show, we have Joanne Condi from our counseling department. We love her. She's going to be answering a question about moving into a relationship with someone who has been divorced and what are some of the challenges there. Then in our culture segment, we have Michael Smalley. He is the author of More Than a Match, which has a ton of practical advice for people who are moving into a relationship that is headed towards marriage. And just a lot of things to consider. And he has a lot of examples from his own first year of marriage, which are both hilarious and a little bit sobering, I guess, on some fronts. So you'll want to hear that for sure. Before we jump into that, I want you to know that this podcast is sponsored by ChristianCafe.com. Don't forget that you can go to Christian Cafe and use the promo code BOUNDLESS to get an extra extended trial period for free. So make sure that you do that. And again, it's ChristianCafe.com and use the promo code BOUNDLESS. And then our roundtable today, which is going to be on pets and relationships. Funny enough, we actually got a question from a listener about this, and we decided to address it in a roundtable segment. She was basically saying she's headed toward marriage with her boyfriend, and he thinks that she is way too attached to her dog. And she basically says, look, growing up in my home, dogs were part of the family. They are treated as family. And he's like, I don't know if I'm okay with this. And so we were like, hey, we're going to talk about this and figure out how do we all relate to our pets? How do you move into a relationship when you have pets? Are there some things that you actually have to give up on either side? How do you come to compromises? And so we have a fun panel with us who are ready to put their pets' lives on the table and talk about them. Thomas Voss is here. Thomas.
What up, Hollywood?
Hey. And give us your little pet's name and situation.
Okay, well, the love of my life, his name is Jazz. Actually, he's not the love of my life, but okay. He's pretty close.
I do like the name Jazz. That's
yeah,
cute.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I like it too. It kind of was one of those names that just kind of stuck because he's really loud and obnoxious sometimes, just like jazz music.
Okay.
He is he's about 18 months old now. He's an 18-month-old son, Conyer. If you guys have ever seen the movie Polly, not the main bird is a blue crown conure, but the little girl that he falls in love with, that's a sun conure.
None of us have seen that movie because
lame. It is a good movie.
Wasn't that movie with like that guy, like Rob Schneider or something? No one watches his movies.
I remember the birds from the movie.
No one watches
I don't remember
his
the
movie.
Humans. Okay. Anyways.
So thank you. It's a bird.
It's a bird.
Most people don't even know what a sun conure is.
Okay, I'm never coming on the show again. So that's my main pet. And then I also have a couple of saltwater aquariums that my friends give me a hard time about. They think
large
I'm addicted.
Large aquariums.
They're not large. If you talk to anyone in the saltwater community, I have small tanks.
Well, well, yeah, like they can't house a shark, but
no,
I mean.
Can't. I
but
50,
yeah, you said one's like 50 some gallons.
56 gallon and then a 28 gallon.
Oof. That's a lot.
Whatever.
A lot. What's in there?
Fish. I'm just kidding. No, I've
well,
got
that. If it's addictive, do you just like keep adding fish? Is that your problem?
Do you know what?
You
it's
can't
coral. I have reef tanks, and so I have all these different types of coral and fish, and then different types of invertebrates, and then I'm always buying something new for it. You know, because I need the new cool gadget that goes with it.
Okay, so that's interesting.
It's a hobby. Okay, it's not a pet.
It's a hobby. It's not a pet. It's a hobby. Okay, cool. Vicki Morgan is with us. Vicki, welcome.
Hello.
Very fun to have you.
Thank you.
Speaking of pets, I think we need to say, because I love this fact, that Vicki actually voiced the screeching eels in The Princess Bride. She is famous. She is among us. She is here at the same table as us. I am just saying she's done a lot
that.
Of voice work. Speaking of Hollywood,
I'm obsessed now you're gonna give
my nickname away to her.
I kind
and
of
call
am.
Her Hollywood.
I'm obsessed.
But anyway, she's done a lot of voice work. Very fun. A lot of sound effects and stuff like that.
Are you gonna
the
recreate
biz.
The create recreate the sound for us?
I can't. You know that was 1984 or so.
She did it once and completely lost her voice.
Yeah. I've lost my screech ability.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, as if that weren't enough, she is also a keeper of rabbits.
Yes.
And that is why she's at the table today, because she is married, and she actually married a guy who now appreciates her rabbits.
When we were dating, he didn't understand why I had rabbits. He didn't understand that you could love or relate to a rabbit. He didn't know that there were facial expressions on a rabbit. I used to say, hey, look, my rabbit looks really sad right now. And he says, how do you even know that?
It looks like a rabbit
to me as it did 2 minutes ago. But now he's the one who points out, you know, I think Jack's feeling a little grumpy today, or he's very adept, more than I am now.
Okay, so how many, between the two of you, how many rabbits do you have?
Well, currently, because I've had rabbits for a long time, but currently we have 3 alpha males.
Okay.
One in each room. And we just lost a frog, which you would appreciate. Oh. We had a miniature African dwarf frog. And then I have a gerbil, who is another star. He was the gerbil in the television commercial for It's Your Kid, Not a Gerbil, by Dr. Kevin Lehman.
Okay. Wow.
So I have that gerbil.
Look at that.
I'm going to have to YouTube
word.
This commercial now.
I know. Yeah, for the book, that came out. Okay. Very cool. All right, Heather. Heather, welcome. Heather Howes is with us, a dog lover representing the female dog lovers out there. She was not the one that wrote our letter. She was not the one that, you know, has a fiance who's ready to dump her over her dog. But she has a wonderful dog. I know her dog. Her dog's name is Shasta, a very friendly and cute dog. But he's a what kind of dog?
He's mostly a yellow lab, and he has a little bit of chow and some maybe some husky in him.
Okay. So. All right. And you actually have a roommate. So you have, you're single, but with a roommate. So already having to learn how to deal with the give and take of
the compromise.
Pets. compromise. So see, Thomas just lives alone. So Jazz.
I don't
live
alone.
You don't?
I live with Jazz, my roommate.
Oh, oh my word.
If you could.
Okay.
If you could give him the respect.
This will be good. This will be good. Okay, so the one thing I want to start out by asking is, what you and pets, did you have, is there, not that I want to like stereotype this, but do most uber pet lovers, did you grow up loving pets, or was this something like later in life where it's like, oh my goodness, why did I never know this world of pets? But I mean, because a lot of people, especially as they get older and then they start dealing with roommates or if they eventually get married, for them, it's just like, this was something I always had. I've always had pets. I had a cat when I was a year old and he, you know, grew up with me. And so just kind of understanding that part of the family syndrome, where were you all with that?
I can't think of a pet or an animal that I've not had.
Okay.
I mean, I've had a worm farm because I thought that would be fun one time. Yeah. I, at one point, went to a rabbit breeder and bought 2 and ended up with 40.
Oh.
And then, let's see, my parents can attest to this. You probably should have had them on the show.
Mm-hmm.
My dad told me one time I wanted a goldfish pond real bad. He was like, if you dig it, you know, I'll build it for you. Not thinking I'd ever in my wildest dreams build it. And 2 weeks later, he had a huge hole in the front yard. That escalated to a 6,000-gallon koi pond. I've had fish tanks my whole life. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Wow, okay.
It's in me.
So you definitely...
I worked at the zoo.
Oh, okay.
I mean, so.
Wow.
Definitely an animal lover.
Yeah.
Okay.
My father had a terrarium, I don't know what you call it, a terrarium with chameleons and frogs and all kinds of things, because he lived in the city, so he couldn't have anything furry. Whereas I enjoyed raising gerbils when I was young, and so anything small and edible and cute, that's kind of like what I gravitated towards.
I would say edible. That's
I called my rabbits my edible friends.
Wow.
So, and I threaten them if they don't behave, then they're going to be on the plate for Thanksgiving next year. But no.
And I bet they shape up right after that.
You'd be surprised how much they understand. But yeah, I've always liked little cute furry things. So... anybody that I wanted to date, usually they had to be an animal lover or else, I would consider us unequally yoked.
Okay. All right.
I was born into a family with a dog.
Mm-hmm.
So up until the age of 5, I had a dog with me. I guess the story is like the dog would sleep by my crib.
Hmm.
One time, I guess my dad had to swap my backside. And the dog growled at him.
Mm.
And so, you know, that kind of touched my heart when I heard about that later on. My protector. Uh-huh. But then I didn't have anything until the age of 11. I found a little stray kitten, begged my parents to let me keep it.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to do that. And just, it's always been in me, always wanting the dog, always loving everyone else's. I always wanted to share my cousin's dog. Whenever we go out there and visit, we'd see him every like 4 years. I'd say, I want half this dog. So he'd give me the back half. And so, you know, just I always wanted to have that animal. Mm-hmm. Just because I don't know. I guess it's always been in me, just that love for animals. But
yeah.
And finally, 4 years ago.
Oh, my word. Okay. Well, now, Vicky, you were telling us that in meeting your husband and dating him and, you know, initially he was like, what? All these rabbits look the same. I don't even understand this. What was your process of introducing him to rabbits? Because you had, I mean, you said these rabbits were your friends through your single life, and you even said you prayed with them, and
yes,
they were just kind of your companions. And so how was he kind of intimidated to be introduced into this mix? Like, how was he going to compete with that?
There was no process for when I was meeting and kind of dating my Christian husband-to-be. He kind of understood that he needed to understand the rabbits to understand me. And I think he had the desire to get to know them as kind of an act of love towards me. So I feel like that was one way he was showing me, biblically even, how much he cared about me, is that he was willing to learn about rabbits. Mm-hmm. And he developed a relationship with them, and then, therefore, I developed a relationship with him. So
it was just a love triangle.
He knew he had to start with the rabbits.
start with the rabbits, and you get your way into my heart.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Now, so what would you guys all, as you think of Vicky's story, and then especially looking at that the listener's letter that they wrote in, how would you guys respond to that? I mean, to really have that kind of conflict there of like, seriously, I don't know. I mean, this guy's basically telling me that, you know, my love of my dog is just too much, or it's too, like, he's concerned that he's not going to have a place in the relationship. Like, the dog is going to be too, how do you establish boundaries along those lines so that really it is one where it's like, okay, well, you're human and have a soul, so maybe I do need to talk to you occasionally. I mean, just where does that play out?
You know, I'm not sure yet, because mm-hmm. I'm not in a relationship. And I've never had a pet while being in a relationship, so I can't really speak into that aspect. I know looking forward, though, specifically with my bird, Jazz, he's definitely noticeable. You know, he doesn't smell, thankfully, mm-hmm. like, you know, some other animals would, but he lets you know he's there. In fact, if I'm home and he's home and he's in his cage, he will not be quiet about it until I let him out of the cage to be with me. Mm-hmm. So I could definitely see that being an issue. In fact,
So when you are home, most of the time he's out of the cage.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
he just flies around and hangs out with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If he's, and then he'll let me know whenever he's ready to be back in the cage. You know, he'll definitely like just start ignoring me and be like, I want to go back over there.
Okay.
I can already see issues coming down the pipeline though, because I've had girls in my house before, and they'll be holding him, and I'll be like ignoring him, and he'll bite them.
Oh.
And then like fly towards me. Hmm. So I'm definitely already seeing this whole territorial, what are you doing here? I don't like you. Get away from
It's going to make for some short relationships there.
Probably.
Sounds like I need a bird
whisperer. Trips to the urgent care.
So, you know, outside of the whole, is she a bird lover aspect? I mean, I have to come to the realization that the type of bird I have is very, you know, flock oriented, and to me, I'm his flock member. And so a new member in the flock is unacceptable. Hmm. And so I have to come to that realization that if I'm going to pursue a relationship and maybe have somebody, you know, get married one day and have her move in with me, then I'll have to address that in a very serious issue. I'm not going to right now though, because I'm very far away from that. But, something I'll have to look at. With the fish tanks, that's a hobby. It's not, you know, although my house sometimes smells like low tide. That's not necessarily a positive.
Well, that's just like living at the beach. I mean,
right. Yeah, it's fine. I have a hammock that I watch TV from in my living room, and so, you know, it's fine. You know, get the coconut smell going. Please.
It's like, I can't live in Maui, but I've got these fish tanks.
Right, it's two degrees outside, but, you know, I've got the ocean in my front room, so it's fine.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right.
I heard birds are possessive, kind of jealous.
Yeah, he's like a two-year-old brat. Mm-hmm. He definitely has the mentality and the temperament. I feel like I'm a parent most of the time. Like, it's really almost, this is why it's hard, because I talk about him like he's a person, because he's got the personality and the temperament of a two-year-old. Mm-hmm. So anyways, yeah, they're pretty possessive.
Huh. Okay, what about other challenges as far as integrating the person-pet kind of hierarchy?
Well, I would, unless the animal, like in your case, the animal is kind of aggressive towards your potential date, I think with dogs and to some degree rabbits, dogs actually, and rabbits and things, they can sense when somebody's not right for you in a way. Mm-hmm. Like when I was dating, I had a boyfriend that my rabbit did not like, and he didn't particularly care for the rabbit. And I came to realize later down the road that we would have been unequally yoked, that he was only a marginal Christian. So I'm not saying listen to your dog. I'm saying listen to God.
Just but, to transpose the letters
listen
there.
Listen to G-O-D, not dog. The
D-O-G. Yeah, the G-O-D, not the D-O-G. Okay.
But yeah, I would say that if your potential mate is not willing to love those that you love, whether that's your family or your dog. I mean, this could be for the writer who wrote in. This could be a picture of things to come, mm-hmm. where that person not only is kind of against your dog, but also kind of against your family or anybody that might be close to you, maybe your friends. So I would say to the writer, you know, keep a sharp ear and eye open for how he treats those around you that you love as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like he is having concern about her priority in her heart, in a mm-hmm. sense. Like the dog is elevated above him, I don't know about above God, which he could be calling her out on something.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a fact of jealousy? I'm not getting all your attention. I'm not your all. Mm-hmm. I think there's that fine line that they have to hopefully work through,
mm-hmm.
you know, and talk about it. Because, I mean, if he's not as much of an animal or dog lover, I think it's a dog in this situation, I definitely think, you know, they need to examine their hearts. Is he willing to give of himself a little bit because that is something that's meaningful to her?
Mm-hmm.
Or is she willing to say, you know what, I love this man. He's not as excited about it as I am, but am I willing to maybe tone it back just a little bit because I value him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've had to kind of think about that.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because Heather and I were actually talking about this like last week or something, because I jokingly was telling her, you know, she's quite a Tim Tebow fan, who
right.
Tim Tebow is single. And so we were kind of like a group of us were saying, okay, the choice between Tim Tebow and Shasta, you know, what would it be? What if Tim Tebow came to you and was like, Heather, I want to marry you, but there's no way I could ever live with a dog. I just couldn't put up with it. What would you choose? And it was just so cute because she was like agonizing over it. She's like, what? How? Why would I have to choose?
And then I was like, he has a dog.
Yeah. So the reality doesn't really match. You know,
she
what
just
we
called
were,
you out, dude.
We were trying to pit her against an insurmountable odd, of course, you know, and it would never happen or whatever. But it does when you come into those relational things, when you have people, because I did not grow up with pets. I did have a couple hamsters because that was the only thing my parents would let me have. But we basically moved from Minnesota from a farm when I was very small to California, to the Bay Area. And my mom was of the opinion that pets are for farms. And when you live in the city, you don't have pets. But they did finally cave on the hamsters when I was in late grade school. But so I don't have that feeling of I don't know what I'm missing. So I always have friends that tell me you should get a dog. I have a fenced yard. I have, you know, it'd be easy for me to do it. But I don't know what I'm missing, so I'd never have that super motivation to get one. Whereas people, I think, who grew up with pets and know what that's like, mm-hmm. it's totally different. My thing is, I look at all the things I would have to give up or all the losses. So I'm like, oh, man, I wouldn't want to deal with pet hair. I wouldn't want to deal with a smell. I wouldn't have to deal with having to kennel or get someone to watch this pet every time. What is it? You know, because I travel. So what do you guys see as, like, the big areas of compromise when it comes to, you know, things that you would or wouldn't have to do or have done maybe in this sense, or things that really probably would be discussion, issues of discussion along those lines?
I mean, the reality of it for me is that I know with having a parrot, whenever I have children, I can't have a parrot in the house with young children. That's a decision I've already personally made. And so in a sense, I've always had Jazz knowing that if I want to pursue a marriage and a family, then he'll have to find a new home. That's something that I've kind of always set in the reality of. I try not to think about it until, you know, it has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But for me,
what's the age span? How long is Jazz going to live?
26 years.
Oh my word. Thomas,
around
you're going to need to get rid of that bird at some point.
You know, and so just the reality for me, if I'm serious about pursuing a relationship and having a family, then I will make life adjustments according to that, because obviously that's going to be my ultimate goal mm-hmm. at that point in my life. The fish tanks, I would like to keep but they're crazy expensive. Mm. And I feel like if I was in the same place I am right now and married, then I wouldn't be able to afford to have the fish tanks. Saltwater aquariums are insane. I mean, like fish alone, like a small fish is $20, mm-hmm. you know, and I have 12 fish in my tank, you know, so do the math. And
they don't live 26 years.
And they don't live 26 years. They may jump out of the tank and die in a week, like, you know, so you never know. But that's just a reality for me anyways, is that I love all pets in general. If down the line we as a family decide to get an animal and a pet or have one already whenever we bring children into the world, then that's a decision I'll make with her. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's the same with rabbits. They're not really pets for children, even though they're billed that way. They're more pets for either kids that are in 4-H or older. Very responsible. Mm-hmm. And
I've been around rabbits when they're all like, you know, stomping you with their legs and stuff. They get crazy.
They do. And we have free range rabbits, so they get to run around.
Oh, my.
So kids and rabbits wouldn't mix. We got married late, so if we are going to have children, it would have to be through adoption. Mm-hmm. But again, I would, in order for us to keep the rabbits, I'd have to adopt a child that was a little bit older. Because
you just adopt a bunch of 4-H kids. That's what you're doing. Then they'll take care of them for you. Project.
One big happy family.
There you go.
I wanted to address an issue back with showing too much affection to your pet and mm-hmm. not enough to your spouse. It can happen. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll get so wrapped up with my rabbits, and then I'll realize I've been sitting on the couch watching a movie with my husband, kissing my little rabbit the whole time. And my husband's just sitting there. I haven't touched him for 2 hours.
So, yeah.
Just wanted to say that, you know, even though we love our pets, we need to be mindful of our spouses yeah. as well.
Now, would he speak up with something like that? Would he be like,
never.
Inequitable. No?
Never. Oh. He's very understanding.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He will just sit there.
He's a keeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, he's definitely a keeper.
Yeah.
He allows you to come to that realization and come to him.
He is amazing. I'm glad that I waited.
Aw. What about you, Heather? Like, what are some compromises or different things you've had to realize? Maybe things that you didn't realize as such a lover of Shasta and of dogs that you've had to be aware of.
Well, I share a house. My friend owns the house, and she allowed me to have the dog. And I've had to compromise with the dog's not allowed on the carpet, you know, not allowed on the furniture. So just me, I'm like, my dog can go anywhere, cuddle with me on the sofa, watch Marley and Me, do some, you know, do this stuff with
cry
me.
Cry together over Marley and Me.
Oh, man, that did touch my heart. But, you know, I've had to say, you know what? He's still in there. I still talk to him. You know, I study with him because I'm going through school also again. But just having him is worth the compromise. Mm-hmm. So once in a while he tries to cross the boundaries, but I watched every single season of Dog Whisperer, so I've learned how to contain him.
That's good. Now, is there anything in having lived with a roommate and realizing the compromises you've had to make that you would, you know, eventually if you got your own place, I mean, anything that you would do differently now? Or would you say, I have my own place, dog has free reign? Or is there anything that you would still rein yourself in on?
I don't think I'd let him be on the furniture.
Okay.
As much. I'd probably get a leather sofa mm-hmm. so it doesn't trap dog hair.
Yeah.
But I mean, just, I've kind of just thought through my own boundaries. Mm-hmm. But I like having them everywhere.
Yeah.
So I think I would just.
Yeah. I had a friend, I lived in a house in Minneapolis with four girls, and one of them had a Sheltie. And if anything sheds, it's mm-hmm. Shelties. Those mm-hmm. things are crazy. And she used to have to go along like the bottom of the sofa was just full because he would just sit there lingering with it. And I mean, it would be your pant legs would just get full of this long dog hair. And she was very vigilant about going along with the lint thing and with the vacuum and stuff like that. But you would, once in a while, we had obviously tile in the kitchen. Then we had hardwood through another portion of the house. And once in a while, you would just see this patch of fur just float along. It was just like, and there goes the Sheltie. So it was just cute. But
probably
anyway.
Buy a Roomba. Probably get one of those too. It just goes around, so I don't have to keep
following those little vacuumers. So.
After the hair, yeah.
Well, cool. This has been a fun discussion, you guys. I want to thank you all for being part of it. And I think it is just good for us to walk a little bit in one another's shoes and understand kind of where we are. And just that, I didn't even realize just the variety of pets that are out there. You know, I always just think traditionally, ah, dogs and cats, whatever. But I mean, to think people are passionate about their pets and different mm-hmm. little personalities, like you said, with Jazz and with the rabbits, with Jack. And mm-hmm. Jack is her husband's rabbit, right?
Right.
So they even have their own pets within the same house that nice. They're, yeah, so that's pretty cute. But very fun. And I think really the lesson is understanding compromise, understanding that God created pets for us, which I think is great, and so many, part of so many homes, which is really a lot of fun. And just recognizing, I think, as all of you said, that, you know, looking at those priorities and relationships and what that looks like. So there is room for compromise and room for making it work in a relationship if it's meant to be. So thank you all for being part of the discussion.
Yeah. Thank you.
Do you find it hard to sleep tonight, resting by the Christmas lights? Could there be something you forgot? Beyond the bows and mistletoe, the tree with presents wrapped below, there's more to this than you had ever thought. Have we lost the reason that we celebrate each year? What is Christmas if there never was a Savior wrapped in a manger? What is Christmas without Christ? This is Christmas. It's all about a Savior wrapped in a manger.
Well, hey, everyone. For this week's culture segment, I'm very privileged to be in the studio with another Smalley. They just keep coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah. It's
it is very true. First, it was your dad, Gary, mm-hmm. and then Greg. Mm-hmm. But Greg, we were just obligated to talk to because now he's my boss.
Contractually so, obligated. That makes sense.
It's very true. We tried to conjure up a few things that he could say to contribute to the conversation, and he did. I think people were okay with it. So we brought him in here, and now you are here. And you all just write books and talk about relationships. So
yeah, we do. We try.
Now, does this mean that you all have great relationships with each other, or do they require work as well?
The good news is we don't hide anything, and so all of our dysfunction is right there in between the pages of all of our books, on the videos, and different things like that. So, you know, and that's actually what's funny is people do make the assumption that, you know, if you do marriage stuff or family stuff for a living, that you're then determined to be healthy, but that's not necessarily true. And what we've always learned and what we focus on, it's not about being perfect, because obviously most of us understand that that's not a possibility. Mm-hmm. It's really about how well can you repair? Mm-hmm. So can you identify when your brother's been a total maniac, and are you allowed to, can you approach him, and can he eventually, you know, seek your forgiveness?
Okay. Well, I think that is good. And I think that is true, because I was a little bit surprised. Now, okay, I've read some of your dad's stuff, mm-hmm. but I will say that it does not even come close to what you talk about in this book that we're going to talk about today, that is called More Than a Match, written with your wife, Amy. Mm-hmm. And I did not even properly introduce you yet. You both have your master's in clinical psychology. You went to Wheaton. Mm-hmm. And you are now, it's director of marriage and family
We actually founded a ministry back in 2005, mm-hmm. and we're now based in Houston. We have a location in Dallas, Texas as well, and we're starting to steadily expand our horizons. But my wife and I are both the co-founders of the Smalley Center.
Okay.
And that's where we provide intensives for premarital couples. So mm-hmm. if you're wanting to get married and be off on the right foot.
Okay.
Couples in crisis, and then families as well.
Okay, awesome. Well, I think that is good. I think it's good to say that because with all those credentials and with all the experience you have unfolded some crazy in this book, mm-hmm. which I just love. I think that's great. And, you know, it reminds me, I think I mentioned this on the show before. One of the best, most telling conversations I had with a friend, and this was several years ago, was when she talked about and I know her folks, she grew up in this just idyllic family setting. Her parents are amazing. Literally, I could say they're amazing. And she married her husband and she said, Lisa, we are still cleaning up after our first 5 years of marriage. And they finally realized that, no, really, they didn't know what they were doing. They had to start getting some marriage counseling and figure out why it was that he could just not measure up to her dad, mm-hmm. and why he was just always like furious with her reaction. And so I think it was a little bit of a wake-up call for them to realize that, wow, you know, two people together in the same house, sometimes some crazy can come out.
Well, it actually takes work.
Yeah.
And I think the trap that I fell into personally was, you know, I'm the son of Gary Smalley. And so anybody who's ready to be married,
you should not be messed up.
Yeah, I'm that guy. And as you read in the book, within 18 hours into our married life and on our honeymoon, we were in a total epic disaster where we ended up leaving our honeymoon early.
Yeah.
That is how crazy dysfunctional it got.
Though it's not many people that have like exes show up on their honeymoons or random people that they're acquainted with. I mean,
that's the story of my life. You might not know this, but you're actually talking to literally one of the only kidney donors. I donated a kidney to my father in 2003. Mm-hmm. And I'm like literally the one kidney donor that almost died. Out of the tens of thousands of those that have happened, I'm the one guy who almost crashed and burned during the operation.
Oh, my word.
So, to have a former girlfriend who cheated on me show up on my honeymoon as I'm angry at my wife, that mm-hmm. is just kind of par for the course.
And basically, dive at you.
Oh, yeah.
And your wife, Amy, is like, what's going on here?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
She got married on the same days, on the same cruise. It's unbelievable.
Well, praise the Lord. That's good.
Amen.
So, all right.
I'm glad you can just lightly brush over my very hurtful emotional wounds.
Hopefully you worked through that. I'm just assuming that's what you went to one of your own intensives at this point and got that done. So hopefully something happened there. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that you mention in the book and are certainly played out in your own life and in your own story, because this book really details some things that people need to know going into marriage, I think. Very helpful, and that's where most of our audience is. So mm-hmm. whether they are not dating anyone at all, or whether they're considering dating someone, or they're in a relationship or engaged, many of them have probably overthought some things, and then maybe they are completely clueless about other things. So the first thing I want to tackle is this idea of compatibility.
Mm-hmm.
Because I need you to even explain what that is. We hear so many definitions of what compatibility is, whether, as you gave the example, online dating sites who have you take extensive questionnaires mm-hmm. on what this is going to mean and how it's going to play out for you. Or you've got people that try to like Myers-Briggs everything. And mm-hmm. if your Myers-Briggs profiles are compatible, then you're okay. Or people that say opposites attract. What really matters in compatibility? What do people need to shake down here, and what is just chuck it out the window?
Well, I think what's really important to understand is, you know, up to it, like, and especially even just in my generation, it was opposites attract. That was sort of the popular thing. So you really looked for someone that you felt could complement in terms of, hey, look, I'm not a detail person, so I should marry someone who's detailed.
Right.
That's that opposite.
That's what
idea.
Paula Abdul said.
Yeah.
So,
and we all know that she is an expert. In all things.
She is. She's a sweetheart.
Very kind, though.
Paula,
at least we can say she's kind.
Okay.
But and so where I want to give people perspective is that this whole compatibility thing right now is sort of faddish. And where I want to encourage people, it's not a bad thing. I mean, it's great to be compatible. So I encourage the different kind of healthier online dating sites. You know, I don't like the ones that are like a meat market where you're literally looking at profile pictures.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how I would encourage going about trying to meet someone. But I also wouldn't be embarrassed if I'm doing one of the more, you know, whatever, higher class match where you're really going through a major profile and an assessment. I wouldn't discourage that at all because
mm-hmm.
it does get harder to meet people out of college.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but here's the deal with compatibility. All right. Is that first of all, let me tell you what they're kind of trying to do. When they're matching two people together, they're really trying to find people that are similar in key areas, similar interests, similar hobbies. So for example, if you love to go out to movies and to a dinner for your dates, well, they don't want to match you with someone who wants to stay indoors. Mm-hmm. And I want to stay at home and I'm a homebody. They're obviously going to try to find someone who would answer that the same way you answer it. Okay, they look for personality traits that are similar. Okay, so where when my wife and I were researching the More Than a Match book and we were talking about compatibility, she actually called me on a plane. I can't even remember. She was probably traveling to New York with her sisters, crying, literally crying. I was like, "What happened? You just got on the plane. You know, you're just starting this vacation." And she said, "Well, I'm reading that book, you know, the eHarmony guy book," and she goes, "I realized we're not compatible." Hmm. And I kind of paused, and then I came back and I went, "You're just now realizing this? You know, 15, you know, 16 years into this marriage, you've just now figured out." My wife and I could not be more different. Hmm. We literally, eHarmony would flag our profiles and say, "Do not allow these two people to meet because we are not compatible." Mm-hmm. All right. But compatibility doesn't predict success, because even people who are compatible are going to get into conflict.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, any deep connected relationship is inevitably going to run into conflict. And so what's really important to understand is that whether you're compatible, which is great, or if you're opposite, like my wife and I, which is also great, there's benefits to both. The key to both styles being successful is their ability to handle and resolve conflict.
Okay.
And so that's where we really focus people.
Okay.
So I don't get hung up, man. If you want to be compatible, great.
Yeah.
Be compatible. It's not going to hurt you. If you're looking for that opposite and you're looking for certain, great, go for it. The reality is, if you don't know how to respond in a good way when your feelings get hurt, you're in trouble in either circumstance.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I found too, like in the online dating world, I found that really I felt like they didn't even match me on things that actually mattered. Like I basically got matched with guys who couldn't even articulate their faith. Very sketchy whether or not they were even believers, mm-hmm. but we both enjoyed outdoor activities. So obviously we must be a match. So that is just sketchy. So,
well, and in the book, we talk about how important your faith. Now, faith compatibility is important.
Yeah.
To where, like, well, my wife, and she shared in there where she had been engaged before.
Mm-hmm.
And her first fiance was Catholic, very devout, wonderful guy, great family, very active in the Catholic Church. Well, she was raised Southern Baptist.
Hmm.
Okay. And people hear that and they think, oh, that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
They're both Christian. It's like, well, yeah. They're both Christian, but, and this is what's so funny, is you just ask one simple question: where are you going to get married? Where do you think a good old Southern Baptist girl from Houston, Texas, where do you think she wants to get married?
Cracker Barrel? I don't know where.
You know what? I'm going to personally cut that clip
Longhorn
out
Steakhouse.
And play it for my wife and all other Texans.
I don't even know.
Your audience in Texas just dropped exponentially.
I know.
No, they want to get married at their church they grew up in, right?
Okay. That was my
churches.
Second answer.
That was where you're going. Well, where does a Catholic have to get married?
Catholic Church.
Yeah. It's not even recognized if they don't do it in the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
So right out of the bat, because of that incompatibility, they're in big trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember working, teaching a class on life skills at a high school in the Ozarks, okay, in Arkansas area. And this young lady goes, well, I don't think, you know, religious compatibility is that big of a deal. I went, really? Well, obviously you're dating someone of a different background. So what is it? And she goes, well, I'm a Catholic and he's a Mormon.
Yikes.
And I just sat there and I thought, so you seriously don't foresee any problems at all in the future? And so, especially when things come down to like faith, mm-hmm. Future goals,
mm-hmm.
Family dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I had an intensive, which is, you know, it was a 2-day intensive with this young couple. They've been married, I think, 6 months. And it was a 2-day private one-on-one intensive. And I'm sitting there and as I'm asking them what brought you in and what's going on, they literally, I was so shocked to hear this. He wanted about 6 kids, was his dream. She wanted 0.
Hmm.
And I remember looking at him going, guys, did this never come up? Well, we just never think to ask about it.
Wow.
And you just go, how do you not at some point during your courtship, dating time, not talk about your desire for kids?
Yeah.
And so there's certain things that I encourage, especially people that are looking into getting married. You sort of need to have your deal breakers.
Mm-hmm.
Those things that you go, this is so important. Like you might say, it is so important for me to be active in church and in my faith. Well, then you know, as you're dating someone, the moment that you can sort of see where they are in that, you'll go, woo,
mm-hmm.
this is a major problem. Okay. We're not matching up with this.
Okay. So let's talk about that a little bit, because I want to, you talk in the book about writing down a list of the top 10 qualities that you're looking for. So we need to unpack this a little bit, because a lot of times here at Boundless, we kind of poo-poo the idea of making lists. Mm-hmm. So we're like, because we feel like a lot of young adults overdo that. So they've got their list and they will say, I have prayed over these 45 things and my husband is going to have them. And, you know, then they're 40 and still single. And so because they only have 44 of the qualities in the person that they're dating. So how, what really are these top 10 qualities going to do, and how much flexibility is there in, you know, are we talking about they have to have blue eyes, or they have to, you know, what types of things are legit and what is not?
Yeah, absolutely. And you've already kind of hinted at the idea of it's not right. It's dysfunctional. I once literally had a single person in their 40s, unmarried, desperately wanting to be married. And I had actually just done a talk on the top qualities. Pulls out, had four pages front and back filled with what had to be met in terms of requirements. Mm-hmm. That's not good. That is way out of balance. But here's the importance of having a list. And actually, I'm even working with my 15-year-old son right now, helping him develop his top 10 list. And so one, when you hear 10, that's not overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So we're not looking at this gigantic list and who could ever. But even on that top 10 list, it's not that all 10 of those have to be met. Now, what I encourage people is you better have some non-negotiables on that list. Mm-hmm. Being, again, the faith stuff, children stuff. Why on earth would you spend time dating someone who doesn't want to have children and you want to have a lot of kids? Mm-hmm. That doesn't even make sense.
Right.
That needs to be on your list if it's that important to you.
Right.
Right? And so what happens is you develop this list, and the list consists of character traits, spiritual qualities. It could be physical things. It's not that you can't, you know, if you want to have on your list, you know, I really want to be attracted to this person, that's fine. People get so nervous, like, oh, I'm shallow at this point or what? Come on. It's called hormones. And so, you know, naturally men and women are going to feel attracted. And if you feel repulsed by someone, it's probably not going to be end up being that successful unless God really radically changes your perception or your heart on that matter.
Okay.
So it's not, I mean, because I'm telling you, people get really nervous about that. Oh, am I being shallow? It's like, no, I have preferences. You have preferences. There's nothing wrong with those. But the key, though, is when I have this list, what happens is everybody I want that I show that I have an interest in, I start evaluating off of this list. And I start checking things off. And the moment, you know, you might have something on there. There's 10 things. You could have someone, you know, I want him to be excited about being a missionary, international missions. Well, you might get to that one and go, woo, he doesn't have any interest in this. Okay, well, does that mean you have to break up with him? No, but what you do then is you start going, okay, let me write down the things that are positive. Let me write down the things that are negative. Are these positives worth this negative? And if international missions is your heart passion, then it's okay for you to say, hey, I don't see myself being happy not being able to do that. You know, the guy wants to work at IBM, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. But boy, he does not have a heart for this. It's actually, you know, you might be outspoken like, no, I have zero interest in doing that. But it's also okay for you to look at the positives and then look at that international missions thing and go, maybe that's not as big. These good things outweigh this one negative.
Yeah.
And what the list does, and this is why I like having a list, is it turns the relationship into something that's purposeful. So I say, you know, it's not willy-nilly. It's frankly not just based on lust, right? I just think this person's hot or we, you know, whatever, which is not a great reason just to get married. It really turns the relationship and turns it into a purposeful thing.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. That makes sense. And I think it's true, like what you were saying about the missionary, you know, it could be, maybe it doesn't mean that he wants to go out and just chat up cannibalistic tribes, but he wants to give to missions or wants to, you know, be involved in some other capacity for that. So, okay, that's good.
But I'm telling you, that positive negative list is huge. And I have all of my couples, when they come to our church, okay, in Houston, because my wife and I are the marriage pastors there, every couple that is already engaged, that's doing our premarital training, which is like 8 weeks or at least 8 sessions, every one of them, I make them write a list of positives and negatives of this person they're engaged to. And I tell them, look, it's not too late. But if you can look at that list and go, here are the, because if you can't see negatives in somebody, there's a problem. Mm-hmm. Nobody's perfect. Everybody has something. And so I get real nervous if someone has their blinders on and they're kind of, they're just not realistic. Mm-hmm. Nobody's perfect. So it's okay to sit there and go, I don't like this and this and this. Yeah. Now, are these things, because you know what a big mistake people make and why divorce rates can be so high? Is that people knowingly get married having issues with that other person. They're a smoker, they're a drinker, they're a whatever, and they just think, well, don't worry, once I get married, he'll understand how important it is that he stops smoking. No, they won't. They like it. You know, they're gonna keep doing it. And so what I do is you look at that positive and negative, compare them, and go, all right, if these negatives never change, are these positives worth that? And if you can say yes,
okay,
you're in a good place.
Okay. I think I have like one negative, maybe two. So I don't think it will be very difficult for the other
person. I've actually noticed 7 just in this interview.
That
alone.
Is so rude. Duh. Oh my goodness, that is
kidding.
So rude.
I'm kidding.
6.5.
All right.
Okay, let's circle back to conflict because we alluded to your story on your honeymoon on the front end, which you share in the book, as well as just some other craziness, backing people into closets, fighting, claws coming out. I mean, this is some high drama here. What was it on your honeymoon that you just did not know? Again, here you are. You are the son of Gary Smalley. I'm sure you had some pep talks. I'm sure you had. What just snapped that made you realize? Because I know you realized that you were acting childish, and you knew, you know, the whole response and how you dealt with being upset. What didn't you know? What happened?
Actually, I would argue that I honestly had no idea I was being childish at the time.
Oh, okay.
Looking back on it, I can see, dude, what were you doing? You were so immature. But here's the one thing that I didn't know that I wish I did before we got married, okay, that would have literally saved our honeymoon. I wish I would have understood the concept of being able to take a timeout. And real simply, a timeout is that if you do something that's offensive to me, do you think right at that moment is the best time for you and I to get into that?
Probably not.
No, because that's the most raw, irrational, crazy I'm going to be. Now, that might mean I'm a yeller or I'm a shutter downer. Okay, you kind of tend to fall into either one of those categories.
Yeah.
But either one of those is irrational, it's not healthy, and they lead to divorce. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so what a timeout does is if you offend me, like, okay, so as we're landing into San Juan, Puerto Rico, my wife says she finally breaks the news that she and her former fiance had actually been there before. And I didn't know this. So that deeply hurt me. She wasn't trying to keep a secret. She didn't know. She was 21. Mm-hmm. She didn't know when to tell me. Okay. And so if I had known then what I know now, I'm telling you, because we've done this now. Previous since then on other vacations, I would have immediately gone, wow, okay, I am really upset about this, but time out. We're on our honeymoon. We're not allowed to get into this right now. So, honey, let's just put this aside and we can deal with this when we get back home. And what you find on a lot of vacations is that thing that you were so angry about, 3 hours later, you realize, okay, I was being really ridiculous. Or you do realize 3-4 days later, all right, that's big enough that we really are going to bring this up. But when we get back, it's a timeout protects fun time from these stupid fights that we get into. And here's reality. I don't have to get into it right then.
Yeah.
That's the misunderstanding people have is I'm wounded and injured. I need to deal with this now or I'm going to be miserable. Mm-hmm. That's not true.
Yeah.
You don't have to be miserable. Call the timeout, calm down, and then know that there's a more appropriate time to talk about this. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's not. On the honeymoon, man, we got to put that aside and just have fun.
Right. Because you won't be able to reclaim that time.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
We'll never have that back.
Yeah.
We were on a 7-day Southern Caribbean cruise. We left on day 6. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll never get that time back. Yeah. And I'll tell you, 17 years later, you know, it's sad.
So how?
We're not miserable about it, but.
Right. Yeah. You know. So how does someone even recognize what their response to conflict is? Because I think a lot of people are clueless. If they grew up with certain patterns or whatever, they don't know that they're responding poorly or they don't know how to do it differently.
Well, and I didn't know either until I learned about it. Now, fortunately, I was in a master's program and I was studying to be a marriage and family therapist. So I happened to go to a 3-day training in San Diego, California with my dad and my brother.
Okay.
And that was the first time I heard that there's really four ways you can respond to conflict that lead to divorce. And so what I encourage people, like if you get more than a match, you'll read all four of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you'll know immediately, if I define what an escalator is, an escalator is when you get hurt, you tend to lash out.
Mm-hmm.
You tend to yell. Things get loud. You can kind of get into saying things that you regret later. That's an escalator. People know that. They go, oh, yeah, that's me. You know, mm-hmm. I'm an escalator. Or an avoider. I know that when I get hurt, I shut down. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to see you. I would rather shove this under the carpet, stuff it deep, deep, deep down, and never deal with it because I hate conflict. Well, I knew immediately, man, I'm a mega avoider. So really what you need to do, and really honestly, the success of any relationship is directly correlated to your amount of knowledge. So the more knowledge you seek, reading books, listening to podcasts, going to seminars, small groups at church, Sunday school classes, all of those are possibilities where you can learn how to be better in all sorts of areas, but even in particular in your relationships.
Yeah, that's good. All right, well, this has just been really a taste of what this book is about. We've got a couple other things that I wanted to touch on, but this will just prompt people to buy the book. And again, it is More Than a Match. A couple things that are in there that we did not discuss. How to end a relationship well is something that you tackle. Mm-hmm. And a lot of you out there, I'm sure, want to know how to do that because some of you are super passive and lame. We have talked about that on the show, and I don't appreciate it. And some of you just blaze people away and don't do that well either. You go to the opposite extreme. So there's something there. And then the end of the book, I was telling Martha, our producer, was basically just a little lesson for me where you just put it all on the table about sex and mm-hmm. what to expect on the honeymoon. I'm assuming your dad proofread that section for you. he definitely just talks very frankly about that. Mm-hmm. He and Amy do. So I think that's just very helpful. So y'all will want to check that out as well. There are no diagrams, though, which I appreciated. So that was good. You can go online and get those.
I thought about PowerPoint presentation, but...
Well, that's in the supplementary materials that people can get. So, but Michael Smalley, everyone, again, he and his wife Amy wrote this book. They're doing great work and wanted to just let you in on that and give you a small taste of this book. More Than a Match, we are linking to it on our blog post, so make sure that you check it out. Thanks so much, Michael.
Awesome. Thank you.
It came upon the midnight clear, that glorious song of old, from angels bending near the earth to touch their harps of gold. Peace on the earth, goodwill to men, from heaven's all-gracious King. The world in solemn stillness lay to hear the angels sing. And ye beneath life's crushing load, whose forms are bending low, who toil steps and slow, look now for glad and golden hours, come swiftly on the way. Oh, rest beside the weary road and hear the angels sing.
Well, we are opening up this week's inbox, and I have Joanne Condi in the studio with me. Hey, Joanne.
Hi, Lisa.
Very Thanks. Pleased to have you here.
Thanks. That's
with
great.
Us. You're just quite a regular now. That's good.
It's fun. I enjoy coming.
Oh,
thank you.
It's very fun. Well, we have got a question, another relationship question for you, this one involving divorce. And so let me go ahead and read this situation to you. She says, I have a friend who I've known for about 8 years online, and he's recently become quite interested in me. In the time I've known him, he's been married and divorced. On one hand, we have a strong friendship and really do understand each other quite well and care for each other. But on the other hand, there's so much baggage, I feel it may be a deal breaker. I'd like to hear your thoughts about this. I know others out there may also face a similar situation with either an online relationship or just considering someone with a past. So let's start by addressing the fact that she does mention that this relationship has been online for 8 years. It sounds like it might be on again, off again. Either they are colleagues or they work together, mm-hmm. or maybe it was a chat room. We don't exactly know what the situation is, but in that 8 years, this guy has been both married and then now divorced. And so this girl has been a constant in that. Mm-hmm. So it looks like, you know, between that and then the fact that now he is divorced and now he's saying he's interested in her, mm-hmm. there are quite a few things here to address. So what do you think needs to be dealt first, Joanne?
Well, yes, I think it is important that we first look at the issue of an 8-year online relationship. And that truly is not reality as it would be seeing someone through their ups and downs and good and bad. And in this day of social media, which is wonderful, has some very good qualities to it. On the other hand, we don't want people to somehow assume that that means how you'll see each other day to day is going to be the same. People can be very different in saying a few little sentences online versus how they live life and mm-hmm. how they handle stress and what they do with frustration and loneliness and sadness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it seems that obviously, you know, he is now divorced. It doesn't say how recently divorced, but obviously within 8 years, he got mm-hmm. married and divorced. And so she's wondering, I mean, it makes me wonder, okay, is there some distance here? Because now how is she gonna, she's concerned about the baggage, the past mm-hmm. situation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess what I would say is if she's going to even explore that, assuming this guy's a believer and all that kind of stuff,
right?
You know, there's got to be some kind of time element to this, and then this stuff mm-hmm. cannot be handled online. So
yes, there we go. I think that is so critical, and that be remembered as we're going through relationships. The other thing, maybe I'm being a stickler here, but the other part that comes to mind is the fact that here she is, a female, having a relationship with him over this 8-year period. And during this time, he has a girlfriend. He's then engaged. So it's a fiancé. He gets married. And during the marriage, there's problems. And during that, then the problems lead to a divorce. And now after the divorce. And I just wonder how that wife would feel about having an 8-year relationship with another woman. Mm-hmm. Maybe others would be okay with that. I think we're talking about some boundary violations and maybe some dangers here.
Mm-hmm. So is there anyone that she should ask about? I mean, is there any hope for this? Would it be a possible relationship, or what would she have to know in place?
Well, I would say you would have to start with meeting someone and spending a little time with them in person, because that, to me, that's the deal breaker. You have to have that factor in place to see, do we even connect when we're with each other? Mm-hmm. The other part of it is, you mentioned, is he a believer? Because God's real clear about being unequally yoked. And what are the conditions of the divorce? Mm-hmm. Do they have biblical grounds for divorce? Did they just get tired of each other? Mm-hmm. Did his wife have an affair? See, all of this would determine in what shape he is right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I would just add to that, that I would really recommend to this listener that you go to your pastor or mm-hmm. someone who is trusted, someone who can actually look at the situation objectively, maybe mm-hmm. someone who knows this other person and who really looks at your relationship with him over these 8 years and then now looks at where it is and mm-hmm. just really gives some clear assessment of what you're really dealing with, because we don't know all the details here. So I would say really bring some kind of accountability into this and someone who could speak into it and be willing to listen to them and to take their advice. Because I know some girls who have gone into relationships that ultimately have been very hurtful with a lot mm-hmm. of baggage that that their pastors had said, this is not a good relationship. I would not recommend this for you. Yes. And they did it anyway. And so
right.
to really be willing to step back if someone says, I don't think this is right. So,
and the Bible said there's wisdom in many counselors. Mm-hmm. And so to not only just go to the pastor, but like you said, listen and pay attention to that. Now, totally separate from being an online friendship, I would like to just address a part about divorce. Whether this person she met in person or not, going through a divorce is really horrific. I mean, it is ripping apart what God has put together as one in body, one in mind, one in spirit. And people just don't go merrily on their way without some major scars. I always recommend to people who have been divorced two things. One, they get some individual counseling for an autopsy, so to speak, of what caused this marriage to die, but then to accept responsibility. And then how do you get personal healing from a divorce? And secondly, what's so important is to get into a Christian divorce support group, because you'll learn things in the support group you won't get from individual counseling and vice versa. So until this person has gone through that, I would say if she wants to consider dating, there needs to be a time off. There needs to just be a time away from each other. Let him sort through what he's gone through without her and that relationship.
Okay. Well, thanks, Joanne. Okay, that is it for this week's show, everyone. Write to us at editor@boundless.org with your feedback, any maybe experience that you've gone through that's similar, anything that you would like to share, and any questions you would like us to address on a future show. And we will obviously see you around here for our next show. Until then, I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.